Chapter 15. They took us into the swine house. Multiple layers of doors closed behind us as we were barged and bullied deeper into the lair. The swine queen strode on ahead of the entourage, past jeering and shrieking members of her cult. As they saw her two prisoners, they communicated their enthusiasm through vigorous floor stomping and the crashing of staffs and weapon stocks against any suitably resonant surface. The only things not being hit or hammered were Pinky and me. Even though we passed within easy reach of her swineherds, no one made the mistake of laying a finger on us. There was no encouragement to be taken from that, though. It was just that our flesh was not to be despoiled. A level beneath the landing stage was a boxy room where we were subjected to further tests, either too complicated or too cumbersome to be done on the surface. Pinky and I both submitted without much resistance. Pinky, because he had to give the impression of passively accepting his fate, and me, because I was feigning more of an injury than Lady Arryk had really given me. True, her aim had been perfect, and it had been suitably painful. But the pulse had gone through soft tissue only, and once the initial shock had passed, some strength and coordination had begun to return to my leg. I masked that by limping and groaning at every opportunity. The examinations were thorough. We were stripped of our outer armor and then closely inspected for anything concealed. More scanning devices were brought in, some wielded by the Swine Queen, giving us her personal attention, and some operated by various pig-masked acolytes. Everything that was used on us had an improvised look. Fixed and handheld screens were consulted, muffled consultations undertaken. It felt as if we were being given a medical review rather than being checked for fitness to be detained and eaten. My wound was bandaged up, but it had never bled. These tests took at least half an hour. The Swine Queen seemed in no rush to conclude them. Perhaps it pleased her to keep Lady Arryk sitting anxiously. At last, though, some verdict was reached, the Swine Queen conferring with her lieutenants and, after much nodding of pig masks and muffled exchanges between them, a command of sorts was sent up from the examination room. A level below the landing stage, the only evidence of Lady Arryk's departure which reached us was a rumbling vibration as the shuttle's thrusters rattled the swine house. Lady Arryk had not been certain how deeply we would be taken inside, though, and had promised us that she would arrange a more reliable signal. We got it about 30 seconds later. The dull chug of those Gatling turrets, responding to a vindictive shot Lady Arryk had lobbed back at the lair. It was the retaliatory blast that counted, since we had a good chance of sensing the activation of those turrets. So too would Glass, waiting far below us.
"I'm surprised she felt the need for that,"
the Swine Queen said, addressing us both.
"Seems to me she got the better side of the deal. I'm the one who ought to feel short, changed."
With our breather masks removed, both of us were now free to speak. "You don't think we're the equal of those stones, your swineness?" I asked.
"The stones are in her possession forever, Mr. De Ruyter. That was your name, wasn't it?"
"It was my name," I agreed.
"You'll see the asymmetry then. I only get to eat and kill the pig once."
"I like the way you say eat and kill, not kill and eat," Pinky said. "Any chance of flipping that order, since I'm asking nicely?"
"You're wrong about that asymmetry, your swineness."
"I am,"
I nodded earnestly. "It's only that way if you choose it. You don't have to eat and kill him." I gave the impression of reconsidering my position. "Well, you can. I'm sure your mind's already made up. But you were never expecting me. I'm the bonus that tips the deal in your favour."
"Because you'll taste as good as the pig. You might not be as nicely aged in alcohol as he is, but we do nosh on men and women sometimes, De Ruyter, just in case you were getting your hopes up."
"But you heard what Lady Arryk said about me. I was good until I wasn't. By good, she means useful. A valuable advisor."
"Shame there ain't any vacancies open."
"I know about your reach down here," I persisted, playing for time. "The lair is impressive enough. I like what you've done with it. But your control only extends to a tiny part of Chasm City.
Your ladyship didn't seem to think too highly of the neighbourhood. Why should any of us care?
Care or not, I'm the one who can help you consolidate the power you do have and extend your reach further than before.
Is he always this weaselly, Pinky?
He has his moments, but I wouldn't trust him. The Swine Queen tilted her mask to look at him.
Hang on. I thought you and he was on the same team against Lady Muck.
True. Pinky said he was also the first to turn traitor when it became clear I wasn't going to win.
That said, I like a man with flexible loyalties.
Get back to me when he's got a knife to your throat.
Ah, but you won't be around to see it anyway.
Now, I'm going to make you last, but no matter how slowly I take you, piece by piece, there'll always be a point where you end. I should warn you, I'm already well past my best.
Aren't we all, Pinky? But we won't hold that against you.
The Swine Queen clapped her hands.
To the carvery! Sound the dinner gong! Supper's ready!
We were strapped onto upright trolleys so that we could be wheeled deeper into Swinehouse and shown off like the prizes we were. Grilled masks were fixed over our mouths, just in case we got any ideas about biting or spitting. As we were trundled along, I was sure that Pinky was doing the same mental calculations I was. With a little warning, we could release the hemoclast at any time, but its effectiveness lay entirely in conjunction with glass's infiltration. If we went too soon, the hemoclast would cause a little local havoc, but burn itself out before glass had time to locate us. If we waited too long, we might get killed out of sheer expediency once the Swine Queen knew she was under attack. Not yet, I told myself. The carvery was some way beneath the examination room. We went down ramps, down spiraling corridors, down slow, whining elevators with scissoring doors. At all points there was a gathering throng of hammering, stomping, and braying swineherds. Some of them had full-face pig masks on, but as we voyaged deeper into the lair, I mapped a hierarchy, with the full-face masks clearly being the relatively elite who were allowed onto the upper floors and permitted into closer contact with the Queen. Beneath these trustees, her inner retinue, were several subordinate ranks, where the herds wore partial masks, covering only a portion of their faces. The most numerous had no masks at all. They were all of them damaged in some way. Scarred, broken-toothed, cankered, white-eyed. Many of them had a permanent drooling madness, a cackling delight in how low they had come. Some of them shook and gibbered. Some bad thing had got into their brains. The Swine Queen had missed the one weapon I carried about my external form, just as she had missed the equivalent adaptation on Pinky. She could not be blamed for that. Our weapons were tiny and nearly useless. Mine was a slightly barbed nail on my second finger, fixed over my own. I had hidden it by closing my fist. The worst it could have done was puncture an eye or gash an artery. Bad news for the one person I reached, but no use at all against masked captors. I tested it against my palm, unseen in my clenched hand. All I had to do was break the flesh. But not yet. Not yet. Grand maroon doors, inset with portholes and elaborate chromed pipework, opened at the Swine Queen's approach. We swept into the carvery. If I had begun to calibrate the numbers of men and women in her cult, now I had to discard my sums and start again. I knew what 1,000 faces looked like from the community meetings in Sun Hollow. This was closer to 2,000. 2,000 stomping, hammering, whooping lunatics dressed in scraps of pig flesh, gathered into 2 steep-tiered galleries set either side of a spectacle of pure horror. The central floor of the carvery was a rectangular area about 20 meters wide and 60 long. It was made of metal, extensively perforated, and arranged with subtle slopes and numerous interconnecting drainage channels. I understood its function immediately, to gather and contain such blood and fluids as were likely to be spilled during the course of the Swine Queen's ministrations. Occupying the floor were 12 wheeled plinths. 10 were occupied. the two nearest us conspicuously empty. Pigs lay bound to each of the others, all in different degrees of consumption. They were flat on their backs, strapped to the hard upper surfaces of the plinths, which in turn mirrored some of the floor's design considerations, being as well equipped with drainage runnels. The plinths had something in common with operating tables or life support couches. Wheeled alongside each of them was a makeshift arrangement of wheezing, huffing, and glugging machines, all pistons, fluid bags, slow-dripping glassware, connected in turn by thick, snaking cables which trailed across the floor, off into ducts in the wall. The pigs were all alive, but all of them would have been better off dead. I did not want to look, but when I considered averting my eyes, I thought how much worse it had to be for Pinky, and by some force of will I held my gaze, determined to record the crime in its fullness. The least badly affected of the pigs had had oblongs of flesh removed, but not yet to the point of losing limbs or extremities. What was the most vile was not that these injuries had been done to them, but there had obviously been time for the wounds to heal over. Probably Rose might have been the agent of some of these repairs, certainly the oldest of them, and I could only begin to guess at the psychological toll such work had taken on her. She would have been doing a healer's duty in the sure and certain knowledge that it was only to facilitate the furtherance of pain. Whoever had been responsible, there had been no lack of skill in their handiwork. There were careful stitch lines, scar tissue sagging over absences. Now new areas had been marked for excision, delineated by drawn-on boxes in hatched tattoos. The life support machines would stop the pigs from bleeding out or dying too quickly from shock. I would say that these were the luckiest of the 10, since they might have walked away once the restraints were undone. But another way of looking at it was that these pigs were only at the start of a journey, and the lucky ones were those near its culmination. The ones near the end were the hardest of all to look at. Almost everything had been cut away, except a limb or part of a limb, and yet they remained living and, I believed, conscious. The Swine Queen strode around these tables, banging her own staff against the metal floor, sometimes against the sides of the tables. She jiggled the fluid lines, made the glassware rattle. She bellowed to her audience, raising her arms, waving the staff above her head. The whooping reached its culmination, and the Swine Queen called her acolytes to order, or its nearest approximation. They settled down, never becoming entirely still or entirely silent. The anticipation was too great for that.
"Let it never be said that we lack the gift of patience, my flock. We've waited many years for this moment, but never with any lack of faith that it would arrive. We asked for this day, and it was given. The one we sought, the rarest and most precious of them all, has been granted unto us."
The Swine Queen paused, lifting her staff to encourage a whoop of approbation.
"Yes, rejoice, all of you. Very soon you'll have your reward. Prize, noshing, the flesh of the old one. I've tasted a little of him, just enough to want more. But now there will be ample meat for sharing. Even the least of you will have your scrap. And as his squeals ring out, as I broadcast them into the city, he'll send a message to others of his kind, and they'll know that I've taken their champion."
Pinky angled his head to mine. We had been parked upright and near enough to each other to be able to speak.
"You still sure you want to work for this lunatic, DeRuyter? You think that's going to work out for you in the long run?"
"It's not my time just yet," I said.
"It might be mine."
"No, I think you can hold on a little longer. You heard what she said. You're the one who's outlasted all the others. She'll keep you going as long as she can because she knows you're one of a kind. So now isn't your time." The Swine Queen sidled back around to us.
"A little chat between old pals, is it? Passing the time, trading reminiscences?"
"Whatever you mean to do to us," I said, "just get on with it."
"Oh, I shall."
This drew a roaring whoop, but rather than encourage it, the Queen gave an angry jab of her staff, bringing down a sudden tense silence.
"A little consideration for our guests, please, my flock. They can hardly hear themselves think over your dinner.
It was only a silence insofar as the audience had quietened for a moment. The life support machines were still making their whirring and gurgling noises. I tried to listen out for something coming up below us. Shouts or gunfire. Some hint that Glass had made her entry and would be with us soon. But there was nothing to be heard. Pinky wanted to start the havoc, and every part of me agreed with him, except for one last rational shred that said we had to wait a little longer. "He's more use to you alive than dead," I said. The Swine Queen leaned in.
"Friends again, is it?"
"I'm just being pragmatic. You see a pig, your swineness. I see a survivor. He hasn't made his way through all these years because he's lucky. He's a force of nature, a ruthlessly adaptable tactician and strategist who Lady Arryk valued for a reason. He understands pigs, but he understands you and me just as capably. Cut him open, and you get to taste his meat, but you'd be wasting something far more valuable."
"I can have my nosh and eat it, you know."
The Swine Queen swiveled her attention onto Pinky.
"It's all right. I'm not going to cut too many bits off you just now. Just a little appetizer or two. Nothing you'll miss."
Pinky writhed against his upright restraints. He had his fists clenched, so there was no way to tell what was going on with his sharpened nails. The pain hit me suddenly. The fire in my blood, the fire that was my blood, had begun to rage again. There had been no warning, no transition when the pain-relieving drug wore off. I tensed, crunching my teeth against each other. The Swine Queen moved to the side of one of the occupied tables, one where the pig was still in the early stages of consumption. An aide took her staff. Then she delved among her tools and came out with a little whirring circular saw. She tested its sparking edge against the print's side, then began to excise a sliver of tissue from the area of the pig's thigh. The pig was still for a moment, as if drugged beyond any immediate effects of the cutting, but that was only temporary. The pig thrashed against the restraints. The pig squealed and bled, and still the Swine Queen continued. What she was removing was only the finest possible slice of flesh, yet it was impossible to imagine the pig being afflicted by any higher pain. The Swine Queen finished her work with a sense of unhurried professionalism, refusing to be put off by the thrashing and the squealing. Finally, she removed the circular saw, holding it aloft, still whirring, and with her other hand, she peeled away a portion of flesh about as large as an eye patch. She tossed it into the audience, an offering to the greedy, grateful masses. They were snared by her, like iron filaments in a magnetic field. Hands strained to grab at the morsel, or to wrestle it from one recipient to another. The Swine Queen watched this commotion for a second or two, pleased or appalled by it, and then returned her attention to the pig. She selected another area of flesh, then dug down with the rotary cutter. Then, with her free hand, snapped her fingers at the fully masked men who had come down with us from the examination room.
"Get our prizes on the bleeding slabs. A little taster won't ruin the main course, and I'm keen to see if the old one's meat is as salty as his conversation."
Two of them moved around to the backs of our trolleys and began to fuss with the restraints. The other two remained in front, long-bladed knives drawn and ready. Human eyes moved behind the sagging, ragged-edged holes cut into their pig faces, but there was no humanity left in those eyes to appeal to.
"She's here,"
I said, not in a whisper, but quietly enough not to be overheard by the Swine Queen, preoccupied with her buzzing saw.
"I don't hear her," Pinky said. "I don't either, but I trust that she's here and won't be long. Are you saying it's time?" "I'm saying it's time." "Good. Couldn't come a second sooner. This blood hurts so badly I'm starting to think I'll take the Swine Queen's knives instead."
The guard in front of me had been troubled by this exchange, and jabbed the tip of the blade under my chin, cocking his head questioningly. The tip had not touched my skin, but it would only need to jerk up a little more to do me harm.
"What's time?"
the pig mask asked.
"An abstract concept,"
I said. This earned me a jab from the blade, drawing blood beneath my jaw. I flinched but did not cry out. Meanwhile, I continued to work the barbed nail into my palm, gouging open my own flesh, until the hemoclast began to spill out from me. There were two points of exit, my hand and my jaw. Neither was a large wound, but that was good. We could only cope with a partial loss of the hemoclast. It might be a weapon, but it still had to do the work of blood. The hemoclastic flow would staunch itself at intervals of about 1 liter, but it was up to each of us to manage the restarting of that process until we were too weakened to continue. I couldn't see the flow from my jaw, except as a spreading redness on my upper chest, but I had a much better view of my hand. The blood was lathering out, behaving in not quite the way blood was supposed to behave. It was a continuous spreading tide, and by the time it engulfed my fingertips, it had begun to self-organize. The lathering became granular rather than smooth, like a sea of red suddenly wind-ruffled into little domains, and those domains then separated from each other, leaving margins of clear, clean, bloodless flesh between them. The hemoclast was forming itself into several hundred sub-elements, each about the size of a small insect. Small, red, gloss-coated insects. The guards could see it happening. They understood that it was wrong. They knew this was not what blood was supposed to do, and they all had a long and excellent understanding of blood, its mechanisms of leakage, flow, and coagulation. What they were seeing was a violation of those, literally, sacred principles. But as if in some dream paralysis, they were struggling to articulate the wrongness they saw before them. The swine queen was still sawing, and the pig still shrieking. The flow from my palm was abating, but already I felt some small but welcome easing in the fire that the blood had lit within me. The hemoclast spilling from my jaw had formed into a column, joining the primary mass gathered around my hand. For a moment, it was as if I had covered my flesh in honey and dipped my hand into an ant's nest. Until they lifted off me. It was an eruption, a sudden busy exodus of tiny red forms. They swarmed into the air, dithered for a moment or two, target selecting, and then exploded in about 2 dozen directions, multiple elements following each vector. They were as fast as darts, and within a second they had reached all their chosen objectives in every corner of the carvery. The havoc came, but before mine struck, Pinky released his own hemoclast too. It was just the one wound in his case, but the effect was comparable. The swarms might not have looked like they were coordinating, but they were in fact acting as a single aggregate weapon, ready to be augmented by the hemoclastic load still within us. The bleeding from my palm had stopped, the weapon detecting that it had expelled about 1 liter of itself. I jabbed myself again, reopening the gash, and again the red tide surged willingly forth. Out among the guards and swine queen acolytes, the little red forms were inflicting no end of chaos. They searched for orifices, sense organs, wounds and weaknesses. Where none could be identified, they impaled and drilled and corkscrewed in anyway. The masks and partial masks were no impediment. They went in fast and sought out neural tissue. Then they exploded, with a pop of stored energy like a tiny firework. In ones and twos, it was enough to knock out specific areas of brain function, incapacitating the host almost instantly. When dozens of hemoclastic units had drilled in at once, the effect was more like a small demolition charge going off behind the eyes. A sort of grey and pink smoke came out of them in a pulse. Mostly that was not survivable, but the afflicted bodies still jerked and spasmed as they went down. The swine queen was still alive, still upright and able to walk and talk. The hemoclastic units would not have spared her intentionally, but it seemed that she had been lucky, or that her mask and armor were offering some additional defense. She made the circular saw whir again, and pushed the blade up against my forehead in a top-to-bottom orientation. She let it skim against my skin, but did not depress it any further.
"Make this stop," she said.
She pressed down, beginning to cut into my face. I reached up with my left hand and wrenched the saw from her grip. My arms had been free from the moment her guards released our restraints, but my legs were still bound. Before the Swine Queen could react, I chewed through the remaining bindings with her saw, then tossed it to Pinky. He was nearly free as well. I hoped that, like me, he was starting to feel better as the hemoclast left his body. The second pulse of units had finished leaving my body from the gash in my hand. Already I felt the giddy, light-headed absence of those 2 liters. Perhaps a little more was spilling from the wound in my face, but it was hard to tell how deeply she had cut. The first wave was nearing the end of its effectiveness, having taken down as many victims as it could, but leaving many still unharmed. The second wave, combining with units sent out by Pinky, was organizing and target-selecting. It was a fuzzy, nervous ball of red, which suddenly dispersed to go after multiple targets. The Swine Queen dug a long-bladed knife from her personal arsenal. I jerked aside as she swung it, surprising myself with the instinctive speed of my reaction, the ease with which it had bypassed any conscious processing. Pinky, free now, ducked behind the Swine Queen and retrieved something from one of her fallen guards. It was a stubby pistol with an oversized barrel and a short, fussy haft. Pinky's hands were not made for it. He tossed it my way, and I caught it deftly, my fingers sliding around the haft and finding the trigger. My hand had been blood-lathered a few seconds ago, but when the hemoclasts detached, they left the skin completely unmarred, with no stickiness or slickness. I pointed the barrel at the Swine Queen's mask and aimed between her eyes. The gun coughed and kicked. She dropped, a finger-sized hole bored into her pig-skinned brow. She made to say something, gurgling and thrashing. Hemoclasts swarmed in, finding the wound and piling over themselves to fight their way into her. The Swine Queen screamed as they did their work and kept on screaming until the detonations which ended her life. We were free, but in no sense safe. There were still too many swineherds. They were scrambling down from the viewing galleries, almost tumbling over each other in their fear and rage. They might not have understood what had happened, but they had seen enough to realize that it had come from within our bodies. I pressed the barb back into my flesh, hoping I could tolerate the loss of another liter. Pinky and I backed against each other. He had the Swine Queen's knife, and I had the gun. It was enough to hold back the advancing swineherds temporarily, but we would need something more to survive. It came. There was a new sound rising from the mob now, wild shrieks, somehow more urgent and terrified than anything we had heard so far. Accompanying this sound was a fast, metallic lashing. A flicker of silver caught my eye. A dancing, gyring, whirlwind, working its way through a field of standing and fallen bodies, chopping into them as it proceeded. I watched in numb recognition. It was one of the 9 cats. I had already seen something of what it could do when Glass gave her demonstration, but nothing had prepared me for this moving vortex of carnage. The 9 cat had become a demonic entity, a whirling quicksilver abomination moving through our enemies like a razor-edged propeller blade. There was more than one. A second had found its way into the carvery, and then a third. There was no defense against these weapons. They went through armor as easily as air, flicked blood and flesh up in their wake, and they gave every impression of never stopping. A storm of body parts rained down on us, and my eyes stung against the blood haze. They would not touch us, I told myself. They had been conditioned to recognize our forensic and biometric traces. I had wanted them to find us, but now that they were here, now that I was seeing their grisly work, my certainties collapsed. Then I spied a fourth, and a fifth. The destruction continued. Pinky and I were now incidental to it. The swineherds had stopped trying to kill us. All any of them were interested in was getting out of that room, fleeing to some imagined sanctuary where the whirling horrors might not reach them. Nor were the pigs entirely safe. The 9 cats were not attacking them directly, but as the tide of destruction lapped around and past the plinths, some incidental injuries were all but guaranteed. The pigs shrieked, as the edges of the blades nicked their already sensitized flesh. The equipment that had been wheeled in to keep some of them alive, or sufficiently buffered from shock, was being toppled and ripped apart without discrimination. Still more of the nine cats were finding their way into the carvery, springing out of ducts and grills. Now that the advance forces had located us, the other units were being signaled to converge on this room.
"There are too many," I said, raising my voice above the shrieking and the chaos. "This is more than she was meant to send in." "If they're here, then so is glass," Pinky said, grunting as he made a pained lunge with the knife, encouraging one of the masked men to keep his distance. "She could barely control one of them."
"She doesn't need to. They're doing what they need to do."
"For now. Do you think you can make it to the landing deck? If Glass has commenced her attack, then Scythe should be moving to the extraction point."
"I can make it, but I'm not the one Lady Attic shot in the leg.
I'll be all right. She aimed well."
I thought I could find the path back the way we had been brought. Almost lost in the chaos, we moved in the direction of the tall maroon doors. We had only got about halfway there before a fresh wave of swineherds burst through, all of them armed and armored. They took a moment to appraise the scene before them, then discharged their weapons, partly in the general direction of the nine cats and partly at us. We would have been dead instantly if they'd had a clear line of fire, but the air was still a storm of blood, bone, meat, and finely shredded armor. Pinky grabbed my shoulder and drove me into the cover of one of the empty plinths. Bullets clanged against the other side of the plinth. They had projectile weapons, but nothing that could penetrate the plinth's thick metal construction. The nine cats were still arriving. There had to be a dozen in the room by now, perhaps as many as 20. One slowed its whirling and sidled up to us, swiveling its blank silver body, its nine needle-tipped limbs varnished with blood.
"It recognizes us," I said quietly. "Tell me, it recognizes us."
Pinky dabbed at his skin and lifted his hand away, crimson stained.
"We're getting a little tainted. Might not be getting so good a biometric fix on us."
The nine cat pushed nearer to me. I pushed back, but there was only so far I could go before I lost the shelter of the plinth. The nine cat lashed out a limb. There was a cold sting against my cheek. The limb withdrew, taking a small sample of me with it. I shot the nine cat. The pistol blasted it into about three large, smoking pieces, dropping to the floor instantly. The disconnected limbs thrashed, but now without purpose. I squeezed away from the ruined machine as best I could.
"Why'd you shoot it?"
I glared at him.
"Would you rather I hadn't shot it?"
"I'd rather those other ones weren't suddenly taking an interest in us."
Half a dozen other nine cats had broken off from whatever they were doing and began to whirlwind their way in our direction. I shot and shot again. With each discharge, I feared that the next squeeze of the trigger would produce silence. The pistol was of a type unknown to me, and I had no idea of its capacity or recovery time. A white explosion blinded and deafened me, and I lay numb, shivering. I forced my eyes open, squinting through dust and pain. Three white forms resolved, hovering on the edge of focus. They had blasted their way into the carvery, and were now dispensing fire from built-in weapons. Two were suits of the same size I knew from Scythe. The third was of a similar design, but smaller and with different anatomical proportions.
"Our rides are here," Pinky said.
Chapter 16. Glass and the two slaved suits stomped in through the hole they had blown in the wall, smoke still billowing from the pop-out slug dispensers in their sleeves. Against the remaining numbers of swineherds, the suits were as good as invulnerable. Bozers were doing the main work now, firing from shoulder emplacements on the suits. Their coordination and accuracy was far beyond any human guidance. These in turn were augmented by micro-grenades, which the suits extracted from a belt feed and tossed into the air with unerring accuracy. The swineherd's projectile weapons did more harm to their users than to the suits, ricocheting off the adaptive armor. Their edged and blunt weapons were as useless as kisses. It was almost cruel, seeing this total disparity in preparedness. But I only had to glance at the still-living forms on the plinths to remind myself the swineherds deserved every moment of it.
The suits continued to work their way towards us. Glass was at least showing some restraint. As far as I could tell, none of her direct shots had yet hit any of the pigs. But there was little accounting for the stray fire and ricochets being scattered around. Then I noticed a development. The nine cats were reacting to the suits. In ones and twos, they were pulling away from whatever they were doing and making lunging, whip-cracking strikes against the suits. Their limbs were not capable of slicing right through the suit's armor, but they were forcing the suits to defend themselves and direct more and more of their energy into emergency repair. Silver gashes were appearing in the white armor, then melting away. But the nine cats were gathering their numbers, flinging themselves against the suits at a quickening rate. Glass's plan was going adrift. The suits began to retaliate. Not just passive defense now, but active measures. The Bowser's angled down to snap on to the nine cats. Mostly, all it took was one shot. Now and then, a lobbed grenade had the same effect. The fifth or sixth time a nine cat was destroyed, it produced an explosion nearly as powerful as the one that had heralded the suit's arrival. It was enough to tip over two of the plinths, spilling their tormented occupants to the blood-slick floor. Everything was sticky and red. No amount of drainage could cope with the current demand. "I'm not sure if we'll be safer in those suits or out of them," I confided to Pinky. "You take your chances either way you like, Stink. Know where I'd sooner be." The suits had gained a moment's advantage over the nine cats. Enough time for Glass to complete her crossing and kneel by us, flanked by the two other suits. Her voice boomed out from the suit's neck. "Are you ready? I'll provide covering fire while you get into the suits. Simply stand and present yourselves to them. They will do the rest." Bullets were still ringing against the plinth. Glass's weapons began to concentrate on the swineherds who had been targeting us, and the incoming volleys became intermittent as their adversaries were taken out or forced to duck behind cover of their own. They had no hope at all, so long as the suits kept working. I chose my moment and sprang for the suit. It packaged itself around me with a reassuring brusqueness, indifferent to my suffering a few more bruises in the process. The faceplate was already framed by the familiar pattern of status icons. Glass had also allowed me access to some of the weapons modes that were normally blocked. Next to me, his head only coming up to my shoulder, Pinky had been swallowed by his own suit. "Now, we leave," Glass said. "We'll use minimum necessary force all the way out." I glanced back at the destruction she had already wrought. That was minimum necessary force?
"Difficult as you may find it to accept, Clavain, I used restraint. I don't want to undermine the structure of this place while we're still inside it."
"Fair observation. What do we do about these prisoners?"
"I am already dispensing a painless, euthanizing gas."
"No, Glass," I said, knowing that to raise my voice would have achieved nothing. "We don't gas them. You have room aboard Scythe for hundreds of evacuees."
"Upon my arrival, I conducted a rapid situational triage. What has happened here is regrettable."
"I'm so glad you find it regrettable," Pinky said.
"They are beyond any sort of salvation, not helped by being caught in the crossfire of our rescue effort. This is by far the kindest option."
"Take him to the ship," Pinky declared. "He matters, apparently."
I turned to him. "Where are you going?"
"To see what I can do about all the other captives she must have in this place." "You think you can work that suit well enough to avoid trouble? Those nine cats are starting to turn against us, and only Glass knows how many more she sent into the building."
"How many?"
Pinky asked her sharply. She looked down at him.
"More. But the suits will get us to Scythe, provided we leave immediately."
"Go," I said. "Get aboard Scythe and prepare for departure. Pinky and I will go back and look for her prisoners."
"I wasn't looking for a shadow," the pig said.
"No, but you might benefit from having someone at your side. Glass, do as I say. If you don't, I'll take this helmet off and breathe in some of that gas you just dispensed."
"I wouldn't allow it," she said, "and I'm not allowing this. Your suits will stay slaved to mine. You have comms and weapons authority, but nothing else, and don't think that means you'd be able to shoot me."
"Glass," I said, seething, "allow us this. If not me, then at least let Pinky search the lower levels." My visor pulsed with a pink hazard warning, a throbbing triangle bracketing an emerging ninecat, sawing its way into the carvery through a solid wall. "They're here," Glass said, "and we're leaving." There was no further debate. Glass set off at a fast stride, and my suit jerked into immediate pursuit. I had no means of slowing or altering my course. The suit's dominion over me was total. Pinky must have come to the same conclusion, because he did not offer a word of protest. I was starting to understand him a little better, to see the calculating intelligence beneath the swagger. Complaint was only effective up to a point, after which it was a waste of energies better kept in reserve. But I wondered what reckoning he planned for Glass, further down the line. More ninecats were breaking into the carvery. We made it to the main doors without resistance, and Glass only paused to lob a few grenades and Bosa pulses back at the emerging ninecats at the far end of the room. Glass shut the doors behind us, then used a continuous Bosa beam to perform a quick fusion weld down the central seam. Then we were moving again. I felt two cold jabs, one in my thigh, the other in my upper arm. "I've been hit."
"No, you've been surgically punctured. Your suit is performing a reverse transition to the buffering solution. Or would you rather keep the hemoclast? Any longer in you and you'd start to die."
I felt better, at least in a relative sense, as the suit did its work on my blood. I hoped Pinky was feeling the same benefit. We rose through the levels without difficulty, encountering only light resistance from the remaining dregs of the swineherds. Somewhere inside me was a developing guilt that I was leaving the other pigs behind to their fates. I tried to negate it by reminding myself that I had come to Chasm City not to rid the city of its evils, but to achieve the very specific objective of securing the stones. That had already cost me pain, fear, and the very real possibility of losing my life. It was enough to know that we had damaged the lair and decapitated the Queen's cult, thereby sowing the likely seeds of its collapse. There were only three of us, and we had risked enough as it was. But I knew this was going to prickle inside me. It wasn't that I had a choice. I had no doubt whatsoever that Glass could make my suit do anything she wanted it to. But what troubled me was my relief that Glass had taken that choice out of my hands. It was a coward's comfort. Glass's suit had decided that the most reliable way out of the swine house was to retrace our journey down from the landing stage. One of the last places we passed through was therefore the examination room, where the Swine Queen had failed to detect the hemoclast. The room thrummed, picking up the vibrations caused by an unusually large spacecraft holding position just overhead, displacing vast quantities of atmosphere as it kept station. A ninecat blocked our path. It was squatting on its needle-thin legs, fixed to the floor like an inverted candelabra. Glass shot it. At least they were able to be killed on an individual basis.
"There are more converging. We must move quickly."
"Dear God, Glass, how many of those things did you release?"
80.
80? Are you insane? How did you get hold of 80 of them?
I reasoned with Lady Eric. I convinced her that an overwhelming force offered our best chance for success. I brought them inside one of the suits."
"You missed something, some details somewhere in their programming. You got arrogant, thinking that there's no system in the universe that the brilliant Glass can't master. Did it occur to you that there might have been a reason those nine cats were left behind, that perhaps they were never to be trusted in the first place?" We ascended the stairs, Glass's suit taking them two rises at a time, and ours following with the same bounding strides. My visor was clotting over with warning symbols again. Detecting the moving mechanical threats it had already decided were not a good thing. I risked a backward glance, and made out a swift, quicksilver scuttling. Two or three of the nine cats were coming up behind us, advancing slowly but deliberately, as if they too had conducted a threat assessment. We were to be neutralized, carefully. Glass blasted open a final set of doors and a howling wind swept in. Murky, yellow-tinged daylight pushed down, interrupted by the clawed shadow of the huge ship hovering just out of sight. Its engines pushed a nerve-shredding scream all the way through my suit. I could only see part of the landing stage, There were a few bodies lying around, but no living swineherds. The turrets that had covered Lady Arryk's ship, those I could see, had been reduced to black smoking chimneys. In one, I could still make out the remains of a Gatling cannon, reduced to a sagging, drooping, sculptural mass, with two goggled and masked skeletons in attendance. Glass led us out. Scythe was about 10 meters above the tops of the turrets, hovering horizontally, its long axis more or less parallel with the chasm wall, its belly ramp lowered to skim against the landing stage. A rush of relief surged over me, and for a moment that guilt was gone entirely. I was about to have my own skin saved, and that was enough. We had done it, got the stones, and saved ourselves. A million hard steps might lie ahead of us, but this one was done. Nearly. One Ninecat emerged from the cover of one of the corpses, then another. Glass fell back, and suddenly I realized that I had complete control of my suit again. "Get aboard, you and the pig. I'll provide a covering fire." I did not argue. It seemed like an excellent plan to me. I might have had weapons authority, but I had nothing to compare with Glass's superhuman reflexes. I grabbed at Pinky's shoulder, sensing his hesitation, and as a pair we ran out across the deck, towards the base of the ramp. It was moving, as Scythe drifted in response to the winds and turbulence rising in the chasm. Glass took care of the two Ninecats that had emerged from the corpses, but others were slithering into view, from apertures and hiding places. Pinky and I dispensed our own weapons with some effectiveness, but since we had to concentrate on running and aiming for the moving platform, our efforts were mixed. Glass was having to take up the slack, and the number of Ninecats was taxing her capabilities. She must have depleted her grenades, because now her suit was only using its bosers. The Ninecats were concentrating their attention on her, judging Pinky and me to be of less immediate concern. We reached the base of the ramp, just as some gust overwhelmed Scythe's control and sent the ramp bludgeoning into us like a runaway cart. It caught me midsection, and I folded into the impact, my chest and arms overhanging the ramp, my legs dangling beneath it, skimming the ground. Pinky had been knocked over completely. The impact had caught him above his center of gravity. I hauled myself onto the ramp, grabbed a rail and reached down to scoop Pinky up as we passed over him again. I grunted and swung him to safety. For an instant, our face plates met, and I saw some reaction in his expression. Not gratitude exactly, but at least a twitch in that direction. "Are you all right?" "I'd say I'm pretty far from all right." He paused. "But I'm better without that shit inside me." Glass was right.
"How so?"
"I ain't ever doing that again." Then we were both standing, facing Glass. I ought to prioritize my own survival and hurry up the ramp, but I could not abandon her that easily. Not while we had so much unfinished business. Glass retreated in the direction of the ramp, her back to us. Her bowser shots were becoming more sparing now. The Ninecats were snipping at her, lashing against her legs and thighs, sometimes flinging themselves against her chest. Silver furrows opened up in the suit, centimeters deep, only to close again as the suit marshaled its repair mechanisms. But the rate at which the Ninecats were inflicting damage was exceeding the suit's capacity for healing. The Ninecats were getting more brazen. One flung itself at Glass, coiled its legs around her knee joint, and made a sharp, savage twist. Glass dropped to a lopsided stagger, then a kneeling posture, with her left hand pressed to the floor.
"Move!" I shouted.
Glass hauled herself back to her feet. She covered some ground, limping as her knee refused to bear her weight, testifying to some severe damage in the suit and perhaps to Glass herself. She fell again, this time flat on her front. She was about 6 meters from the drifting sanctuary of the ramp. I made an instantaneous decision and hopped back onto the deck. A Ninecat was already coiling itself around Glass's right leg below the knee, chewing into the armor as it tightened its hold. I moved into a low, scrambling posture and grabbed Glass's outstretched right hand. Trusting the suit to apply all necessary power augmentation, I yanked her as hard as I could and nearly fell backwards in the direction of the ramp. I recovered, and the ramp brushed against me. Either by luck or intention, the ship had closed the distance. Pinky grabbed me, and I retained my hold on Glass. Pinky pulled harder, and by effort and will, we managed to get both Glass and myself onto the ramp. Most of Glass was still overhanging, but it was enough. Scythe must have detected that its master was now back aboard, in the technical sense, because we began to ascend very rapidly, with the ramp retracting back into the belly. With Pinky still fixed onto me, I adjusted my hold on Glass and pulled more of her onto the ramp, with just her legs overhanging. I sighted my Bowser and blasted the Nine Cat still attached to Glass. The Nine Cat fell away, a charred, flailing ruin. The pulse had taken a bite out of the suit as well, a blackened, smoking depression in which it was impossible to say where the laminated structures of the suit ended and Glass began. The ramp continued to seal up into the belly. When it was nearly done and the chasm walls were racing past us as Scythe accelerated, two of the sphere robots dropped out and extracted Glass from our care, spiriting her with immense speed back into the ship. Pinky and I followed, both of us risking a last glance down at the swine house before the ramp closed off our view. Multiple explosions flowered around the swine house. They hit suddenly and in unison, concentrated around the anchor points where the swine house extended its tethers and wall braces. The tethers snapped and whiplashed, and the braces and buttresses sagged and ripped under uncontrolled force. The explosions halted. They had done their work, and mechanics and gravity would finish the task. The swine house was detaching from the chasm wall. Instead of dropping like a stone, it seemed to hover for a second or two, unwilling to submit to the inevitable. Then, still moving as one structure, it began a slow, leisurely acceleration. Pinky and I watched in the last seconds before the view was closed to us. The swine house was tumbling forward, facing down, and parts of it were flaking off as the winds of the chasm had their way. Still accelerating, it lost itself in the opacity of the deeper mist layers. It was like watching a dark coffin vanishing beneath roiling white waves. All that remained were the remnants of the buttresses and tethers, the latter still flailing around as if in some terrible agitation. "It's still a long way down," I said quietly, "like I need to be reminded. It might have been the right thing for her to do. If there was no way to save the prisoners inside, then at least they'll be out of their pain very shortly. But not yet. Not just yet, Scorp." The ramp sealed up into the belly lock. There were the two of us there. The spheres had already bustled away with Glass. The air exchange proceeded rapidly and our suits peeled away from us as we stepped into the suiting room. Two more robots arrived in prompt fashion and immediately set about attending to our obvious injuries, while we remained standing. While that was going on, and our old blood pumped back into us by the same robots, I wondered about Glass and the price she had paid for our rescue. "I won't say that went well," I said, "but given how much more badly it could have gone, I think we have to consider ourselves lucky." I expected some rebuff, but Pinky's answer wrong-footed me. "You think she'll mend, Stink? I think she has a better chance of it than you or I would have in the same situation. The main thing is, for whatever purpose they're going to serve, we have the Gideon stones." I nodded at the floor. Somewhere below us, lost in the mist, I wondered if the swine house was still falling. Everything else, including your survival or mine, has to be secondary to that. "I'm not saying this rubs out all my doubts about you. I'd be surprised if it did. But it's a start. A small one." He paused. "One other thing." "Yes?" I asked guardedly. "Why'd you call me Scorp?"
"I didn't."
"Yes, you did. Very distinctly. I didn't mishear. So where'd it come from? What made that drop from your lips?
Does it mean something?"
"It's my name. A name. One of several. Lady Arik knows it,
and she knows that just now I happen to prefer Pinky. But Scorpio is a name I took once, and it didn't fall out of your mouth by accident. I can't explain it. Perhaps Lady Arryk said it once and I picked up on it without realizing? No, not that. Nor did you hear it from Snowdrop. She doesn't know it. Plenty she does know, but not that. Anyway, you use the form of it he always did. I was Scorp to Neville. But I'm not him, I said, raising my hands in protest. I might be his brother, maybe I can start to believe that much, but I'm not him. I shook my head, rattled by Pinky's line of questioning and unable to deny the root of it. I had used that name. For an instant, a piece of the past had swum into my present, a connection between Pinky and me, as if we already knew each other. Glass will know, I said. Pinky nodded slowly. You want her to live? More that I don't want her to die before I wring some answers out of her. You're deeper than you look, Stink. Pinky went to the door that led out of the suiting room into the rest of Scythe. Let's go see if we can find that cold-hearted ghoul, shall we? That sounds like an excellent plan. He opened the door. Glass was not on the other side of it, but 100 other faces were. I was the first to speak. After everything, she rescued them. Before she came for us, she must have found them and got them aboard Scythe.
We have tongues,
said the foremost of the hyperpigs, the one who had been standing immediately in front of the door.
At least those of us she didn't get around to cutting them out of.
The pig, dressed in little more than rags, offered a hand.
I'm Barras.
I took Barras's hand. I'm something. Call me Warren, for now.
He's working through some issues, Pinky said. Then to Barras, I'm Pinky. Maybe you already knew that.
Word did get round,
Barras said, nodding slowly and with something like admiration.
Especially when you came to the swinehouse. They were gearing up for the Feast of the Century.
So I gathered. Are you going to be all right, Barras? I'm sorry we didn't get to free you personally, but Glass had other ideas.
I'll be all right, Pinky. We'll all be all right.
Barras looked back at the throng pressing up behind him, stretching away along the corridor's length.
This is a good day. This morning we were all going to die, and now we're not. I mean, not just yet, and not in the carvery. I don't know whether the news you have for us is good or bad in your terms, but I guarantee it'll seem good to us.
How many of you did she rescue? I asked.
We haven't done numbers,
Barras said,
but about 3/4, I'd guess. Some she couldn't get to in time. She said she would save as many as she could, but some would have to stay behind.
It's gone, Pinky said.
Barras did not need clarification.
It's better. I'm sorry for those we left behind, but this is better.
Do you remember Snowdrop?
There was a cautious murmur from the gathering.
We do. They say she made it up. Did you have news?
Better than that, Barras.
Pinky closed his hand around Barras's wrist, squeezing it hard. You'll see her soon, when we get back to Lady Arryk's stronghold. And others. Bruno, Chersini, Maud, Yilin. If those names mean anything to you, they all made it. They're with us, and you'll see them soon. I felt bad about dragging the conversation back into the immediate reality, but it had to be done. Did you see Glass after you came aboard?
No,
Barras said, puzzlement creasing his brow.
Where is she? I thought you'd know.
Glass was hurt. The ship must be looking after her. But that leaves the question of who's looking after the ship. I braced my hand against the wall, feeling vibrations. The floor was tilted, and my knees were registering an increasing load. We seemed to be climbing, so I think we can assume we're on our way back to space. But I'm not going to sit back and assume the best. I raised my voice. Ship,
Scythe, you know me. You knew me well enough to wake me up when Glass was in trouble. Now I'd really like to see her.
Can you operate this ship? Pinky asked.
Glass assigned me certain controls, but not all of them, and I don't know what the ship will and won't let me do.
Scythe!
A door opened before me, in what had previously been the unmarked side of the corridor. Barras and three of the pigs squeezed aside. Floating in the doorway was one of the sphere robots, with its two arms extended in supplication.
Follow it, Pinky said. I'll stay with Barras. We have to start discussing plans for these survivors. When you have something, get back to us.
I will. I hesitated at the point of reaching out to him, wanting to cement whatever newfound respect had begun to form between us. But I worried that it was still too fragile for that, and I might do more harm than good. Instead, I contented myself with nodding, meeting his eyes as I did so.
We won't waste the opportunity to help these people, Pinky.
Damn right we won't, he answered.
I set off after the robot, the door sealing behind me. The angle of the floor tilted, acceleration rising, and then the floor formed treads into itself, and I found myself climbing a steepening stairway. After a turn or two, the robot brought me to a room in the ship that I had not seen before, despite my wanderings. It was the medical suite, or infirmary, or whatever Glass called it. She was in the middle of the bright white room, lit by the angelic glow emanating from its own seamless walls, cordoned by medical machines and enclosed in a large, fluid-filled tank. Glass was restrained by a harness of spider-like manipulators that were applying gentle contact to various intact parts of her body. She was not wearing any sort of mask or breathing device, so she was either inhaling the pale green support medium or already dead. But if she were dead, or in some way beyond resurrection, I did not think the machines would be showing such obvious devotion. Whether they were trying to keep her alive, or bring her back to life, I was in no doubt that something was happening. Larger machines moved around outside the tank with speed and purpose. I supposed they were running scans of some sort, or perhaps projecting energies into the tank. Within it, smaller machines swam or undulated through the medium with the busy industry of fish. Now and then, one of the machines on the outside made contact with the tank's exterior and seemed to exchange a machine or part of a machine with those on the inside through a matter-permeable region of the container. A constant flicker of blue lights emanated from the machines. But Glass herself was still, her face a mask of death. It was motionless, and her eyes were dark-lidded. If she breathed, I saw no sign of it. I noticed a familiar-looking device fixed to a medical console. A tray-sized portable medical scanner, not far removed from the instruments we had in Sun Hollow. I detached the device, thumbed it to power, and swept it across the tank, eyeing the blur of details which played across its display surface. I zeroed in on Glass, and allowed the device to probe into her chest, peeling away layers of anatomy as it scanned and processed. Now, at last, I had a clearer view of the implanted mass. Glass was either too preoccupied to override the imagery, or no longer concerned with the keeping of secrets. It was a fist-sized kernel of dense machinery, lodged deep in her thoracic cavity. An artificial heart or heart-lung machine? When we spoke in Sun Hollow, just before leaving the pressurized part of the tunnel, she had admitted that it was a life support device. But I could also see Glass's heart and her lungs. The heart pulsed, and the lungs inflated and deflated, albeit very slowly. So she was breathing after all, was alive. What did a creature like Glass, already superhumanly strong and resilient, need with a clumsy-looking machine inside her chest? The scanner freckled over with static.
Clavaine,
her voice sounded, ringing from the walls, even as her mouth remained still.
Did no one tell you it's bad manners to pry?
I set aside the scanner. I'm sorry that you were hurt.
Sorry that I was nearly killed before you had a chance to do it yourself? Or sorry that these injuries have upstaged some of what you might have been thinking of doing to me?
I am simply sorry you were hurt.
That doesn't sound like you. Whatever happened to your pledge?
I blunted her question with one of my own. Why in hell didn't you tell us that you'd already saved those pigs?
Because I had no reason to justify myself.
Because their safety was contingent on the safe departure of Scythe, which at that point was by no means assured. It was a good thing. A kind thing.
It was tactically feasible.
Oh, shut up, Glass. You can drop the act. I see you for what you are. A nearly invulnerable shell wrapped around something that's still a lot warmer and more human than she's ready to admit. A human core that still makes mistakes and still cares.
It was an error to risk rescuing the pigs.
I was already beginning to see indications that the Nine Cats were reverting to non-compliance. Non-compliance? What do you call death? Non-respiration?
I call death, death. We have a solid understanding.
She paused. But it was an error. I risked compromising the one component of the operation we could ill afford to lose. I'm back to being a component now, am I?
We're all components.
Those pigs are people you saved. You can run some cold-blooded calculation after the fact and say you shouldn't have done it, but that doesn't change the fact of their survival. They were going to die. Now they get to live. We may not have improved their life chances. I received a transmission from Lady Arik as soon as she was clear of Yellowstone. Conditions have deteriorated while we were down below.
To what extent?
The inhibitor movements we have been monitoring since our arrival have shifted to a more organized level of activity. Lady Arik's stronghold has become the focus of their attentions.
Then we have to do something.
Right answer. Go to the control room and ask the ship to put you in contact with Lady Arik. Scythe will do what it can to avoid signal interception, but you must refrain from all but essential communication.
Why are you telling me this?
I need time for self-repair. Perhaps several days. The ship will place me in an induced coma to assist the neural processes.
This really isn't the time.
There's no choice. I have to skirt death in order to live again. Now go and speak to Lady Arik. She will understand where we have to go next.
The fabled Charybdis?
Not yet. Before Charybdis, we need more information. We will find it on Ararat, in the P. Eridani system. Lady Arik will explain.
Glass, I said softly.
Yes.
Don't die in there. I placed my hand against the container, half wondering if she might move her hand to press against mine from the other side. But Glass made no movement, and I left her to heal.